Hey everyone, this is James Mackey and welcome to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. Join us as we cover high-level thought leadership and step-by-step guides on how to make people a competitive advantage for your organization. I'm incredibly proud to be the CEO of Secure Vision, the sponsor of this show and the number one contract recruiting, embedded recruiting, and RPO firm. A thank you to our partners, Greenhouse, the hiring operating system for people-first companies, and GEM, the all-in-one hiring solution recruiters love. Let's go.
Hi, and welcome to episode 23 of Talent Acquisition Trends and Strategy. Today, we are joined by Elijah Elkins. Elijah, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, James. Appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited that you're able to join us today. And I'm really excited to speak with you about the topics we've kind of outlined for today. But before we jump into it, would you mind telling everybody on the show a little bit about yourself and what you're up to right now?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Elijah Elkins, currently located in Williamsburg, Virginia. So you can Google that if you're not familiar with it. Actually, just a few hours, I think, south east of you, right, James?
Yeah. I'm in Northern Virginia in Reston area. So I think it's probably like a 2-3 hour drive or something like that.
Nice. Yeah, I'll have to make it up there at some point to get together in person. Yeah. But I've been down here for about 3 months. We moved here, my wife, Tana, and I. We actually lived in England for 3 years, which was pretty awesome. About a 45-minute train ride outside of London in a little village called Wargrave on the Thames. Beautiful, right? Picturesque, really fun. So I've basically been in talent acquisition probably around 7 years or so, and working mostly with tech startups and a lot of SaaS startups. Variety of different roles, right? Started my own little recruitment agency working with tech startups in the US and Europe. Moved into an in-house role leading talent acquisition at a Series B tech company in the UK through to Series C. Built out a team from scratch to probably like four or five people, amazing people. And then left to join a recruitment SaaS company called CoMeet, applicant tracking system, right? The number one applicant tracking system, pretty sure in Israel specifically and expanding in other places. And what we're doing is building out recruitment and sourcing services to kind of be delivered through the software. I think we're the only ones in the world doing that. If you hear of anybody else doing that, let me know because I'm curious. But yeah, really excited to be at CoMeet and leading the delivery team.
Yeah, well, we're excited, and I think just with your background and experience, and I think there's a lot of value that we can add to the audience today. And just so everybody knows, too, Elijah and I have actually had the opportunity to work together quite extensively. I guess at this point, probably a year or two ago, we started working together. Yeah. When I was advising CoMeet on building out services division. So we had a lot of time to really talk strategy around how to develop effective talent strategies for startups and growth stage companies, and thinking through how to effectively scale talent acquisition solutions, both from an agency perspective as well as in-house for primarily product companies that are scaling rapidly. So what I'm really excited about this conversation is just because we know each other pretty well. We're just going to be able to riff and just, I think, just pack this episode full of value. So I guess to jump into it, the first topic we have is empathy-driven recruitment. And I would like to just hear a little bit more about what that means to you. You know, if you consider that kind of like a high-level strategy, and then how is that truly baked into process, now, culture, process, policy? How do you actually implement it opposed to it just being a nice kind of, you know, like lip service type of thing where like, obviously everybody wants to be people first, right? Or be empathetic. But I would love to hear, like, again, like what it means to you and then how you actually implement that within CoMeet and for your clients as well.
Yeah. So I think empathy-driven recruiting is a bit of that North Star for us. As we were looking at building out the team, right? Remember, and making kind of our first few hires, we're trying to figure out like what can unite people, what can we kind of use, not as a filter exactly, but looking for the right type of recruiters. And I know that could sound offensive, right? But anybody who's been in recruiting for a while or worked with recruiters knows that there can be a lot of bad recruiters or not the right type of recruiters. Some of that I think is incentivization plan and the cultures and the models that they were a part of. I don't think it's that they're like bad people, right? I think they were trained in poor ways or incentivized by things that made them maybe not lead or recruit with empathy for the candidates and the hiring managers and just any other stakeholders involved. But the right type of recruiters for us is people that are driven by empathy. They want to put themselves in the hiring manager's shoes. They put themselves in the shoes of the candidate, right? From the sourcing, the outreach message, what's going to interest them, to the interviewing, interview prep, you know, giving them some advice and tips all the way through to the offer and trying to kind of keep that balance between empathy for the hiring manager and the customer, right? Like maybe the budget's only a certain size or there's certain benefits they can't offer, but also giving pushback if they don't feel like that's actually truly valuing people and valuing the candidate. So I feel like those are kind of the two groups that we're always trying to have empathy with. And then it also makes teamwork and the culture you build, I think, a little more impactful as well, if you're always trying to empathize with one another.
Sure, sure. And I think just to kind of piggyback on what you're saying too, I think the other important element is optimizing for experience. I think particularly on the agency side and actually in-house too, I think it's across the board. It's just very apparent on the agency side. There's in our industry, it's weird. Like there's so many companies that they're just focused on outcomes and it's very transactional. What are we going to do this week? Mm-hmm. Outcome-wise, like hitting volume-driven metrics or just focusing on revenue. And one of the like the biggest like light bulb moments for me in business and that really helped us like start to aggressively scale was when I was like, well, you know what? Like, what if the experience of working with us mattered just as much, if not more, than the outcomes we're producing? Which seems kind of wild, like because you're mm-hmm. like, well, no, outcomes are all that matter. Like that's what we learn, especially when we're coming up in leadership and become executives, right? But the reality is like if you can remove friction and create great experiences for everybody associated with your company, your employees, your clients, your candidates, right? Even your vendors, mm-hmm. you know, that is going to accelerate and scale word of mouth and referral business. You know, it's like just creating that amazing experience. And part of that is having empathy. Like you actually have to kind of give a shit about the people that you're working with mm-hmm. and you want them to have a good experience working with you. So I think those things go hand in hand. And if you're truly going to create great experiences, you have to be empathetic because you have to actually care about, you know, how people are interacting with your product or your solution or your team or so on and so forth. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's good stuff. And I know we want to talk about like just talent acquisition models. And I think that's it kind of like one thing you said earlier was like, you know, a lot of people have an experience working with bad recruiters, right? Mm-hmm. And in one parallel that, I don't know, it just kind of reminds me of like, this is one quote by Warren Buffett. And he said, like, when good leadership meets bad business economics, the bad economics always win. So it's like, it doesn't mm-hmm. like the quality of the leader is not going to matter if it's a bad business model. Right. I think like the parallel to that is it's the same with recruiting. I think a lot of recruiters get a bad rap, similar to how a lot of salespeople get a bad rap. But I think more times than not, it has more to do with how the business model is created. And again, focusing on transactional outcomes versus optimizing for experience and alignment mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. quality of hire, right? Versus opposed to just like butts and seat volume, right? So kind of curious to get your thoughts on that too. Like when you're thinking about like talent acquisition structure, team structure for Comeet or for your clients, how do you think about bringing alignment and creating great experiences and making sure that you can empower your recruiters to get the best outcomes possible?
Yeah, I think the thing that we're constantly struggling with and pushing against is the agency mentality. And I mean the typical agency, right? Like just contingency, kind of slinging CVs, you know, not being really consultative. I think there's less and less agencies like that over time. I think there's a lot more like good agencies being created or shifting towards just better models. But I think it's really important to be able to focus on partnership, right? So we're constantly trying to stress with the customer all throughout the sales process, onboarding, et cetera, this is a partnership, right? It's your hire. We're here to help you make a hire. We're going to tell you things that you don't want to hear, like your compensation's too low, like having people come to the office in 2022 isn't entirely ideal, especially in like the tech startup space, right? So we have tough conversations with them, but we're constantly pushing the word partnership and trying to align, but they're so used to working with agencies, right? That they're just like, where are my candidates, right? That's the question I always hear, right? And I'm sure you hear that too. Like, where are my candidates? And it's more than that, right?
Well, yeah. And I think it's, that's why having a different business model as an agency is also helpful. It's mm-hmm. not just because it's like more effective and optimized, and we can get into all that, but it's also that when companies engage with you through a different business model, you kind of break that pattern sometimes of how they mm-hmm. think they're supposed to engage with you. And you can kind of tell them what it's going to be like. Now, of course, that doesn't always work. But like one thing we started doing, I don't know if y'all do this, but we actually put it in our agreements, like on the first page of our contract, what the partnership looks like. It's like we are an embedded partner, meaning we have internal Slack access, internal access to ATS. Mm-hmm. We are going to be part of the leadership calls regarding talent acquisition. We put all of that in the contract to make sure, and it actually has helped. It's not, again, it's not bulletproof. Like mm-hmm. there are still times in which it doesn't work, but it does help, you know? So it's, I think having optimizing your business model to create alignment, operate different than other firms, also creates an opportunity to kind of educate the customer on what the partnership should look like too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great point. I think our sales deck, right, like definitely has it in there in our outreach messaging. I'm not positive, like on the contract, I really looked at one for a little while. The sales team's doing most of that. But the challenge we run into in setting those expectations sometimes is that the hiring manager wasn't involved in that. I don't know how you all navigate it, but right, like HR decided to kind of buy and set up the partnership, said, hey, here's like, you know, these recruiters, or however they word that with the hiring manager. And the hiring manager is really the one coming with this expectation from agencies and models that they've engaged in before. So I think it's probably more the hiring managers that we're trying to reset expectations with on partnership than the HR team who like purchased a solution or agreed to it, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think too, it's like you all are still working with a lot of international companies too, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I think that's also, it's like, you know, it's like, and requires like another layer of like resetting expectations, because working with international teams, sometimes there can be a communication breakdown, right? If they don't, you know, particularly for startups that, you know, maybe they don't have all the right processes built out, right?
Yeah. Sometimes they're making their first hire in the US and then they ask us like, so how do we get a contract out? And it's like, whoa, like, we're not, you know, lawyers, like we can't draft your first US employment contract for you. We helped, you know, get you the candidate and make the offer, but, and we can make introductions, right, to people that can help with that. But you're right, it is different when you're working with like a lot of international businesses. We have a lot of Israeli customers that we work with, and we've worked with a few in other parts of EMEA also.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's interesting working with international companies. I mean, you're right. Like they're a lot more likely to ask you for all these other kind of complimentary resources. Mm-hmm. And I just got to the point where I started making introductions, because at first I was like sending them like template offer letters and all this stuff. And then I had this like moment where I was like, oh, wait a second. Like, wait, maybe if I'm sending this stuff, does that make me liable? If you know, mm-hmm. So I was like, so I stopped doing that. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Like the best thing you can do is just kind of point them in the right direction to a resource, right? And not try to take on that the HR kind of compliance and legal stuff, because you don't want to open yourself up to liability ultimately.
Yeah. 100%.
And I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if that's like, if it does, but you know, like still
seems safer though. Right.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
That's not what we do. That's not what you're paying us for. So here's like other people that can help you with that. We can give some guidance on like best practice. We do compensation benchmarking right and like educating on the US market. You know, that's not like a liability thing. That's just helping them better understand the US market from a hiring perspective. But yeah, definitely pointing them to resources when it's anything right. that can be a bit sticky.
If it's anything more tactical and they're really pushing me, that I'll just be like, this is what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, a reminder, like,
right. This is what we do.
Yeah.
You know, take, do what you want. This is what we do. Well, cool. So are you still, so I remember when I was working with you, we were kind of going through a shift at the time, thinking about the right profile of recruiter to be effective working with startups and growth stage companies, mm-hmm. particularly from like, obviously our companies are a little bit different, but they're essentially both kind of embedded, flexible recruiting solutions, right? So
yeah.
You know, basically like people borrow recruiters from us. Like that's kind of the business that we're in at the end of the day. So we were kind of making the shift or thinking through like, do we want more people from an in-house background or do we want people kind of from like a staffing background? Mm-hmm. And I know like at the time we were like, okay, we kind of made a decision. We're going to push for more of that staffing because we want people to really think of recruiting as funnels and metrics and thinking about things like conversions and top loss mm-hmm. reasons and time and stage and kind of pipeline management and being a little bit more critical surrounding that kind of that process and that sense of urgency, which of course, mm-hmm. of course there's great in-house recruiters who have that too. I'm not saying there aren't, but just from a percentage likelihood of getting the right person in the seat for the founding team, you know, I think we were starting to lean toward more of the agency background. How is that evolving? Is that still kind of like, what are your thoughts on that for a company similar to ours? Right. I mean, do you still feel like that's a solid background? Are you starting to hire more in-house people? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's definitely been an ongoing discussion and things that we've been trying to figure out. I think when I first started, I thought, I don't know if this is arrogantly, it's just kind of all I knew. Like I thought, well, let's get somebody who's been in-house and worked with startups, right? Like that's what I had just done. And I thought, well, working for startups, like working with startups as customers, it's helpful if you've worked in one because you can empathize, you can understand, you know what it's like, you can connect with them better. I thought that, right? And then we ended up hiring a number of people more, as you said, from kind of the staffing and recruitment background, no in-house experience. And they've done an incredible job. Like we have an amazing team. They picked up working with startups and working with Israeli customers and cultural nuances and all of that stuff so fast that I felt almost a little stupid for thinking that that it wasn't that quick to pick up, right? So I think hiring for the recruiting actual skills, you know, do they know how to do booleans and use LinkedIn Recruiter, some of the tactical skills that you just need to have, and then hiring based on kind of that empathy driven recruiting philosophy. Sure, if they work with startups, it's useful, right? But I think it's more around that character side of things and the competencies that they have. The startup stuff, like I said, they picked it up and now, you know, that's not even really a focus for, you know, the hires that we make for our team to work with our customers.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're just now getting big enough to where we could probably start to expand our in-house recruiting in terms of hiring people from that background. Mm-hmm. But it was very important for me that I want, you know, my first, you know, 15, 20, 25 recruiters primarily to come from an agency background. And that's pretty evenly split between temporary staffing. But if it is temporary staffing, it's like consultative. I want it to be like IT or then I do, if it's temp, then I want it to be something about it to be relevant from the types of positions mm-hmm. or more consultative. Typically, of course, there's exceptions. You can find great volume-based people. I'm not talking about exceptions. I'm more so just talking about in general, right? Mm-hmm. So with that background, perm, contingent, as well as from other RPOs. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, I love doing that. If you can find like the more aggressive, like sales bent people from RPOs, they're fantastic. It can be
sometimes under leveraged mm-hmm. at RPOs. Sorry for cutting you off there. I just, when you mentioned the RPOs, I think there's some RPOs that unlike your model and what we're doing, right? We're really letting people like take ownership and build relationships with the hiring managers, make recommendations on employer brandings. Like show what you know about TA, educate them. You're the hiring expert, right? But there's other RPOs and other models where it's, you know, get them candidates. And that's all it is. And then they're under leveraged. And those really good recruiters, they're very experienced or sourcers. They want to go somewhere else where they can actually like be themselves and fully leverage all the talent and experience they have.
Yeah. I've received several cease and desists from RPOs. Right. It's like, we have like literally a process now built out around what we do when we receive a cease and desist. It's like, and it's just so obnoxious because it's like, they're, you know, it's like, it's all BS. Like, we're not doing anything wrong. Right? Yeah. Like, these aren't your indentured servants. Like, these are humans that can choose where they want to work. Yeah. And they're not even like violating non-competes or anything like that. We're not taking customers. We're not taking relationships. Mm-hmm. We're not, you know, none of that crap. But it's like a lot of these RPOs, that people are under leveraged. There's limited professional development opportunities as a result of that. And the other mm-hmm. thing is, a lot of times they're underpaid. Like,
yeah.
And so it's like, it's not my fault. I'm paying your people twice as much as what you were. Like, if you want to retain your staff, like, pay them better, treat them well, lead with empathy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just obnoxious that there's companies that would rather invest in building out a huge legal team.
Yep.
Than just invest in their own people. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you want to sue me. It's like, screw you. I'm sorry. Just like, I take it very personally, because it's just like, it's just so ridiculous. Like, that's the focus, right? Like,
yeah.
Why aren't these companies just investing in creating great experiences for their people, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
100%. Yeah. I definitely agree. And I've been really impressed with what you've been doing with Secure Vision and the culture, some of the things that you've been posting online. I mean, we've been taking cues, right? Like, I'll see a good idea that you've shared with doing. The holiday calendar, right? I know you've done some stuff around PTO. Like, you've really tried to look at the pain points that recruiters often have in their work environments. And I think been trying to create a better experience for them. And whenever I see like one of the ideas, or sometimes like I'll ask them, like, that's great, right? And then I'll go talk to our CEO, Omer, about, you know, implementing that for our team. Because for the most part, like, they're just really good ideas that create healthy environments for recruiters that, you know, from the looks of it, recruiters want to work in.
Yeah. And it's, vice versa, like, the feelings mutual. I mean, we've, you know, from our strategy conversations also kind of helped define our path here at Secure Vision too, right? Thinking about our delivery model and thinking about how to scale out that delivery model from an agency side to really give a high quality in-house feel to how mm-hmm. we do things, but also bring that process, that regimented kind of like demand gen and sales kind of motion into recruiting mm-hmm. for our clients, and finding that right balance. Right. But I guess, like, you know, one of the things we wanted to talk about too, and this may be a good segue, is getting into, okay, so it's just like, maybe larger startups or growth stage companies, how to determine how big like the in-house recruiting team should be. And then whether or not, like, how do they, you know, there's obviously a ton we could talk about, but I think just to start, how to determine how many internal recruiters they need, when they should leverage contingent partners, when they should leverage, you know, retained search, executive search, right? Or when they should leverage something like Elastic Recruiting or RPO. I mean, mm-hmm. how do you go about, like, are there, like, is it, do you do it like on a percentage basis? Like, oh, like 60% of effort should be in-house versus, I mean, how do you kind of think about helping companies craft that solution?
Yeah. So we've been having some conversations with customers recently who are closing funding rounds, right? And the questions I'm asking are like, what's the hiring plan? Right? Like, how many people do you need to hire and by when? So those are like two big things. Do you need to hire 100 people? And is that 100 people over the next 10 years? Right? Or is that, of course not, but like, is it 100 people in the next 6 months? Right? So like, how many people and how quickly, like, what's that pace, I think, is really important. And then I also think there's the almighty time zone that sometimes people ignore. Maybe to their detriment. Like, there is an element of time zone that I don't think it has to be a big factor, but it's just something to consider. Like, are you asking people to work in the middle of the night, right? Like, are they having to do calls with candidates when like they would normally be sleeping? I think there's just some nuance around time zone, but really thinking about the workforce model too, right? Is it remote? Like, is everybody remote? Is it a hub and spoke model? Are there offices, but then there's like kind of regional get-togethers? Is everybody in one place? The recruitment team and the model kind of needs to reflect and be set up to effectively serve the workforce model of the company, right? So what are the hiring targets? What's the workforce model? And then you can get into what's the appropriate, I guess you could say, like talent acquisition strategy and slicing and dicing, you know, percentages of in-house versus RPO versus contingency. I know it's pretty high level, but that's where I start at least.
Yeah. And it's very situational. So it's hard to put it into like an exact playbook. But I mean, like, so maybe we can just talk through some situations. So, you know, for instance, like for startups, let's say from 10 to 50 people, they might start out with a solution similar to ours, right? Because they don't want to build the in-house team. But by the time they're 20, they're hitting 30 people. And if they have growth plans to exceed 50, to me, it's like at that level, when you're at 30, and you know you're going to be above 50. When you get to that point, I always recommend like you have to hire an internal recruit. Like, of course, I want your business. We want, you know, but you need to have some internal structure and process. And of course, we provide that. But it's just you want that. You want to have the in-house option that's, you know, the steady kind of go-to person that can really own process and optimization and candidate experience and all that kind of stuff. And then you want to be able to augment that with a partner, ideally like us. I think, you know, for particularly companies that are younger, unless you're a very, very experienced hiring manager, I don't think it makes sense to go the contingent path because you don't have the right checks and balances in place to ensure quality of hire, usually. So I think it's like, I don't mind contingent. I just think it's a later growth stage motion because at that point you have a built out internal talent acquisition team. And you're basically like just saying, okay, let's throw gasoline on this and like just, you know, have it explode. But we have the right checks and balances, the right, you know, people in place, process, technology to ensure we can maintain a really high quality of hire through a contingent firm. Because like you got to remember, like contingent firms aren't incentivized for quality.
Right. They're
incentivized for some middles and hires. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, a lot of sales leaders like that because they're like, oh, well, you know, the people are going to work harder and faster if, you know, it's contingent. It's like, no, not necessarily. They're a lot more likely to also, you know, not prioritize you if you have like one little thing wrong with your process or.
Yeah. Or shop the candidates around, right? Like they've got a great AE candidate and they're going to send it to like 15 different companies instead of, right, working kind of just with you to build your talent pool with your employer brand.
Right, right. Exactly. So it's like, I feel like for, again, 30 going up to 50, get an in-house person, augment with some kind of flexible RPO or embedded solution. And the thing is like, I know like that people could think like, well, yeah, but you both are kind of biased. Like, well, sure. But you know, we also have in-house experience.
Yeah.
Like we've done it. We've worked with the vendors. I've hired the, you know, I've worked with contingent firms, all these, you know, I've been on the other side of those contracts. And that's why we've decided to work where we do. Because we know that this is a higher quality option. And that's why we've, you know, decided to invest, right?
Yeah, 100%.
We do, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we both worked with agencies, right? Almost from in the in-house perspective. And there were some good agencies, right? Like, you know, I could probably give a couple shout outs if I could remember all their names that helped us out with some different tough roles and hiring really good salespeople in the UK when I was in the UK. But yeah, at the same time, like these solutions, these flexible RPO solutions for startups are newer, right? I think one of the first companies, like kind of the old school company that did it was Bing. And then Robinhood acquired Bing, right? And then, yeah, there's a number of other players now. But there's still not that many of us, and there's still startups, maybe not wasting, but spending tons and tons of money with contingency firms instead of working with like a flexible RPO or a contract recruiter, right? Somebody who's actually going to be committed to you and your brand and your process and your candidate experience. So you're building something, right? Building a foundation, not just, you know, getting a sales hire, right? Those are two different mindsets.
Yeah. And just speaking of Bink, shout out to Boris. The guy, he's incredible. Had a chance to talk to him a couple of times.
I talked to him as well. He's great.
Yeah. Good guy. So let's talk about from like 50 to 200 people, right? So we've kind of discussed what to do, you know, 30 to 50 range, right? If you're under 30, then probably no in-house, maybe you have an operations person doing TA. I think just to point on that a little bit, hire operations early, right? Hire somebody who can do people and ops, people ops, but also just like a separate motion, like just, you know, people, talent and operations really early, ideally in your first 10 hires, in my opinion. If you have intention to scale, right? Then
yeah, think about engineering, right? Is anybody in engineering doing that without somebody with at least a little time on DevOps? Probably not anymore. But yet there is still resistance for startups in general and certain departments, right? Like sales or even delivery, to be able to have someone dedicated or partially dedicated to ops is super important for scale.
Oh my gosh. It's a no brainer. It's also like CEOs that are resistant or leaderships that are resistant to like executive assistants. It's like, they don't understand how much of a bottleneck they are until they finally hire one. And then they're just like, oh my God, everything is moving so much faster. You know, it's like, cause it's like a point of pride, like, oh, I work hard. It's like, no, yeah, but you should be thinking about the strategic stuff that's going to drive the business forward, not scheduling.
Yeah. Right? Like, yeah, 100%.
So, but anyways, yeah. So ops early. And then when you hit 30, internal TA, augment with flexible RPO to 50 to 200, hopefully you have a little bit more process built out. This is where it depends on how fast your scale. If you're in hyper growth, I still think it might be too early to go contingent. But it depends, right? It depends on the seniority of your recruiting leader, how effective your hiring managers are. So if you have like a really senior VP of sales that's been hiring for 20 years or something, then I feel better, like go for contingent. But if you have like VPs that are pushing up from like a director level, which many times you find at growth stage companies, because it's like that balance of like experience and just hustling. Mm-hmm. Then I feel like it's too soon for those departments at least to go contingent. I'm just kind of curious to get your thoughts on that growth phase.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some of the customers that we've worked with. Like there's a number of roles that have been, you know, to be transparent, they've been challenging for us, right? Like we build kind of like custom talent pools for the customer for different positions. Our sweet spot, right, is like go to market, right? So sales, marketing, customer success, CSMs, AEs, SDR/BDRs, or marketing people, product marketing, engineering, right? But then there's these companies that, and they're brilliant companies, right? Because they're doing something different. It's not just pure SaaS. Maybe they have like a data science team, or they need some cybersecurity analyst. There's some of those roles that we've at least seen it be challenging for, you know, flexible RPO to do, or even in-house. I think there's probably a place for some very niche specialist, you know, contingency agreements so that you can focus right on what you do well. You want to build a TA function, not necessarily to do everything well, right? But you need to be able to do like 80 to 90% of, you know, the bulk of the hiring that there is as you scale really, really well and stay focused on that. If somebody on your team doesn't know how to hire this like cybersecurity, you know, senior ninja who's like done this and that, like this, you know what I mean? The unicorn, the purple squirrel, you don't need your team. You need to know them. They need to know how to find purple squirrels and, you know, those unicorn candidates for different roles in general to be a good recruiter. But I don't think, you know, they kind of need to specialize in all these different things outside of, you know, certain disciplines that are core to the business scaling. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think to take it a step further too, I think a lot of companies in this phase should consider to hire a high-level consultant that can focus on talent strategy. Like, I've had a couple conversations lately with a couple leaders that own like these like talent strategy, talent consultancy firms, and it's not recruiting, but it's like, you know, they start with all the really high level stuff about like culture and values and principles and stuff like that. But then they get into more of like, okay, what are the most important role requirements? How do we boil this down into like, okay, you know, what are the company objectives and outcomes? What are the department outcomes? And then how can we kind of really boil down to the nuts and bolts of like what matters for this role? Mm-hmm. And just thinking about how to like simplify the profile and really get to the core of what's going to drive success. Mm-hmm. Right. And because I think that more companies should be thinking about investing in that kind of strategist to come in and help, because otherwise
that's a good point.
You know, it gets so much more straight, like what you're talking about, like these really hard to fill roles with startups that are looking for like, you know, three positions in one. And sometimes you get like the stubborn CEOs that are just like, no, we will find this human. It's just like, no, maybe you will. But even if you do, it's not a scalable motion. Like that shouldn't be your strategy at scale. Like, okay, maybe you find one and they're like, oh, well, 2 years ago we found somebody. It's like, okay, but now you have to hire 10 of them. And that's not a scalable, repeatable motion, right? So I think the talent strategy piece is important too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, if the role, if it took you 6 months to hire the person, right, in your business, like your targets that you and the commitments you've made to investors, you need to hit, right? You need that person in the next 60 days. Like something has to give, right? Like you can't just do both. Sure, you can try the search as is. We're constantly having to tell customers though, 30 days into the search, 45 days into the search. We do it as soon as we can, right? But usually they don't listen till 30 to 45 days in. That you have to widen the requirements, like lessen the requirements, look, you know, make the role remote or at least hybrid, offer reload. Like something has to give if you really need the talent, right? They set the talent pool. And I feel like they don't always realize how their job description, their requirements, that's all a recruiter is like bringing back to you, right? Like we're trying to help you find the person you want. And you can either make that really hard by shoving, like you said, James, three roles into one and then giving it some odd title, you know, kind of the role stuffing that startups often do. They put like the three different hats, you know, into one position and then want somebody with experience in all three versus, yeah, like maybe separating that out and making a few different hires. Because you know, that's what you need for the business.
Yeah. You know what? And I'll just be honest and say, I sometimes still catch myself doing that. Like where we're coming up with a JD for a new hire and I'm like, oh, but they could also do this. And it would be really cool if they're, you know, have a background in marketing, recruiting and operations. Can we find the, you know, it's like, you know, it's just, and you're like, wait a second. and every time in my career that I've actually decided to really make the investment and segment out the roles and pay more money for the senior person and don't get greedy in terms of like the skill set and just boil down the role, just prioritize communicating with the leadership team. Like I talk with Nick, like, hey, like here are the different things that we need. What do we need the most? What is going to drive growth most directly? And then just, okay, then let's not worry about all this other stuff that we need to get done. Let's just fix this one problem that's going to be the biggest growth lever. And then we can fix the other stuff opposed to trying to hire the three in one. Right. So I think it comes down to prioritization and just understanding what your objectives are for the company and then working backward to figure out like what's the most direct path and then just simplify and go with that person first. Right.
Yeah.
And it's hard, easier said than done. Right. Like again, it's a conversation. Like Nick and I were literally talking about it this week about, should we hire, do we need a salesperson? Do we need kind of like a candidate marketing person, right? A community manager, possibly even like we're thinking about all these different ways to add value and scale word of mouth and referral and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, just basically Nick was like, look, like all that stuff sounds cool, but salesperson, like that's, we need more quality leads coming in. So some variation of that, that's got to be the priority first. And then we can do the other stuff basically. Right.
Yeah.
Right, Nick? One thing I've noticed in my experience is not everyone has that killer mindset. There is a small percentage of employees who are like, yeah, let me take all this stuff on. They can do it well. Those folks are few and far between. And, you know, typically start them off small and have them build up and up, but just unloading a ton of stuff on someone in the get-go, a lot of people can't really handle that.
Yeah, it's definitely true. And it's also, do you want one person to handle all that before you get to know them? Like, do you want to hire somebody that's doing like basically touching like every function within the business? You know what I mean? Like, it's almost better. Like, hey, let's give them this one job. Let's see how they do with that. And then if we want, you know, if they have the ambition and desire and it makes sense for it to expand the skill set or the role requirement, we can do that after, you know, a few months, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a bit like project management, honestly, right? Like the one thing you're looking out for and project management professionals are always looking out for is scope creep. Like, is the project becoming bigger than we initially kind of scoped it out, right? Is the scope creeping larger and larger? It's the same like you're saying with roles, right? Like, what's the business problem that we're actually trying to solve or the opportunity we're trying to leverage and take advantage of? Let's design for that and not have like this kind of role creep where we keep, you know, scooping more things into it. It may be one of the biggest problems actually that startups or mistakes startups, I think, are making is that, and then taking 7 months to try and find, you know, the unicorn person who can do that instead of just getting somebody really good in that can solve the initial problem and then learn and grow, as you said, to take on more responsibility as they've been kind of faithful with a few things and then giving them more.
Right. Right. I think, interesting parallel. Do you know Sam Jacobs? He's the founder CEO of Pavilion.
I've heard of Pavilion and am familiar with him, but I haven't met him.
So one of the things that he said, in a recent post was, he said, you know, a lot of times people will go to him and say like, hey, how come you don't like, why don't you just roll up like this service into your company or, you know, start a search firm within the company or, you know, do X, Y, and Z. And he's always like, you know, more junior operators always think of that as a path forward. But the reality is like when you have more experience in your career, you realize that that's going to dilute your focus and to really just hone in and focus on your core offering. Mm-hmm. Right. And don't get greedy and try to do all this different crap and be mediocre at it. You know, just pick your thing and just be the best, be the category leader. And I think that boils down into like individual role descriptions too. It's like, don't have somebody doing like 10 different things. Right. I mean, that's kind of an ops person. Right. So there's kind of an exception, right? They're doing all sorts of stuff. But I think for most roles, it's like, yeah, it's, and then people also make the mistake of, all right, this person's crushing it. Let's give them more. And then you just give them more and more and more until they burn out and then they leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's another threat, that's a great point.
Yeah. And that it makes a lot of sense because our CEO, Omer Tajer, because I have a lot of ideas, right? Like I'm kind of the profile you talked about earlier of like kind of coming up from like head or director level, moving into like VP level, you know, young and hungry, however you want to look at it. Very motivated. And Omer's like constantly pushing back, like, we can't do everything, right? It's really important that we focus, like we need to be the best at this and not be adding in all these other things. And obviously, like he has a lot more experience than I do. And I learned a lot from that wisdom. But you're right, it is kind of that more experienced operator who's pushing back against, you know, all the ideas that would dilute focus and momentum.
Right, right. And I mean, really, what do you want to be known for too? It's also like a branding motion. Like you want to be known as the category leader for like your thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like the results of being the best is significantly better than the results of being the second best or the third best. Mm-hmm. Like just that extra little lift makes all the difference in the world. So I'm a huge believer of that. And speaking of Omer, I learned a lot from him too. I think one of the biggest lessons I learned from him was process, how important process is. Mm-hmm. He really got me starting to realize that process documents are assets. And I don't know why that was like a light bulb moment for me, but it was just kind of like, because at the time I was like very just verbally just like explaining, okay, like you do this, you do that, but it wasn't scalable. It wasn't repeatable. The knowledge transfer is much harder because if somebody leaves and it's like a total mess, onboarding takes longer. I mean, there's just so many reasons why it's so important to have process built out for every single part of your business. Right. And, I loved his, like the way he would say is like, look, if you just had to hand somebody this process guide and you couldn't explain anything to them and they had to figure out how to do the job, like, is it clear enough?
Mm.
And I was like, wow, that's really smart. That's really smart. And I was like, damn, I really got to start doing this for my own business. You know,
I think that was one of the first projects we worked on together was actually the process playbook for like the delivery and Elastic recruiting team.
It was, man. It was. And that was like, you know, again, just getting everything like in my brain on paper. Mm-hmm. I remember it was like the first time that I had really done it to that level. Mm-hmm. And then basically, you know, when I took on other kind of advisory roles and obviously for Secure Vision, first and foremost, mm-hmm. that was like always the first thing I did mm-hmm. was just like, okay, I gotta get this process down. Right. It's like every time we have an idea on a leadership meeting, I'm like, hey, Andrea, can we write the process playbook for that? Like it's, mm-hmm. it's every little thing and it's constantly evolving. It's always a work in motion. It's never set, but we just put it on Google Sheets and we just, at this point, we probably have over like 300 process playbooks spanning demand side and delivery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't taken it. Well, not that many, but we've continued documenting things and kind of updating the playbook, creating different procedures and guides as well. Because that is something, yeah, like you said, it's very important to Omer. It's very important to a growing business as well. And yeah, I'm learning things from Omer all the time. Like technical things, pivot tables and different things in Sheets and SciSense, right? Like he was showing me some like data science stuff yesterday, but then also just kind of business wisdom things as well regarding funding rounds and, you know, staying focused and leadership. So it's, yeah it's been really great to work with Omer. For
sure. Oh yeah. He's a strong operator and he knows how to cut through the noise and just like dial in and obsess on like one problem at a time.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a lot of lessons learned. Well, look, man, this has been a ton of fun. I would love to do this again if you'd be open to a round two. Thanks. You know, thank you for joining us today. This was great.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. Always here and always enjoy chatting with you. And if we record some of those chats, I'm more than okay with that.
yeah, for sure. And by the way, just before you jump off, if people want to follow you online, where can they find you?
So codemeet.co, right, is like the company website. And then the best place for me is probably LinkedIn. So Elijah Elkins on LinkedIn. Follow, connect, whatever, reach out. Happy to help with whatever I can.
Yeah, for everybody listening, definitely take Elijah up on that. Follow him on LinkedIn. Incredibly bright guy. A lot of great strategies when it comes to talent acquisition. So thanks again, Elijah, for joining us today. And for everybody tuning in, thank you so much. And we'll see you next time. Take care. Thank you for tuning in to the Breakthrough Hiring Show. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode and gained a lot of valuable insights to help guide your talent strategy. I also want to say thank you to my team at Secure Vision for making the show possible. Secure Vision is the number one embedded recruitment provider, and we are a 3-time category leader on G2. Secure Vision partners with over 150 companies to provide on-demand recruiters who specialize in either tech, revenue, or G&A. For more information, you can visit securevision.io. For more content, you can follow me on LinkedIn at James Mackey or on Twitter at James Mackey DMV. We've dropped links in the description. If you want to be on our show or have any topics you'd like for us to cover, reach out at breakthroughhiring.io. We really appreciate your support with reviews on Apple Podcasts. And lastly, make sure to tune in every Tuesday and Thursday for a new episode. See you next time.